In this episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska,
I said,
"And I demand all of you evil voices in Joe's head, leave now and never come back." And I ended it with an amen.
Fairbanks police officer Peggy Sullivan finds a creative way to deal with a troubled man, and Fairbanks defense attorney Bill Satterberg gets a glimpse of what his clients have been going through.
Now, I had actually thought about spending the night in jail because I had a lot of clients I had to meet that day anyway. And I figured, and what the hell, I mean, see what the food's like and a few things like that, maybe even get a tattoo.
Frontier Justice, up next on Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. I'm Rob Prince. The judicial system in Alaska faces some unique challenges due to the unique nature of the state. Villages off the road system require special systems of policing and justice most other states don't have to consider. Addressing these issues sometimes requires creativity and improvisation. As we'll hear in our first story today, Peggy Sullivan shared this story at our November 2024 live event in Fairbanks.
I was a Fairbanks police officer in my former life. And that was, thank you. That was nearly 19 years ago, so time flies. I spent most of my career working midnight shift. And it was on one of those very, very busy midnight shifts that I was asked to stay over and work day shift. It was so busy that night that I was not able to get a break for lunch. So I was really hungry. So my plan was to ask dispatch if I could get a break for lunch. Well, as it turns out, that day shift was just as busy as midnight shift had been. So I knew I was doomed to starve to death. But I thought, well, at some point during the day, I asked dispatch if I could please, please get a lunch break. And she said, no. But she said, if you handle this next call, I'll do my best to get you a break. So I said, okay, what's the call? She said, well, we got a guy out there in the lobby. He says he's hearing voices in his head. I'm like, oh, well, tell me more. She said, all I know is that he has evil voices talking to him in his head. I said, okay, well, sounds like he's probably a good candidate for a fourth floor transport, which meant I'll scoop him up, bring him over to FMH on the fourth floor, which is the psych ward. And she said, or he might be a good candidate for an exorcism. And we both we both chuckled about that one. So I went out to the lobby, and I met a young man out there wearing a baseball cap, and I escorted him into a little interview room right off the lobby. And we introduced ourselves to each other and sat down at the table. Now, for this story, I'm just going to call him Joe. So I said, hey, Joe, so why are you here at FPD? What's going on? And he said he was hearing voices, evil voices in his head. So I said, okay, tell me, what are those voices saying to you? And really, honestly, I thought he'd say that those voices were telling him to harm himself or harm others, which right there, I could scoop him up, bring him over to FMH, and I'd go to lunch. So he proceeded to tell me all of what the evil voices were telling him. And he had quite a list of things, and they were quite evil. I won't go into those, but he went on for a good 20 minutes or more. And when he stopped, I realized he never once said anything about those voices telling him to either harm himself or harm others. So I thought, well, okay, I'm just going to ask. So, Joe, are those voices telling you to hurt yourself? And he said, no. I said, are they telling you to hurt someone else? Again, it was a very flat no. So then I thought, well, okay, I'll just get right to the point. Hey, Joe, Are those voices telling you to kill yourself? No. Are they telling you to kill someone else? No. By then, I can be honest, I was ready to harm him. My stomach had already eaten itself out and was really eyeballing my liver. So we sat there in silence for a while, and I looked at Joe, and his eyes were closed and his head was bent down. And I thought, how can I help him? What am I going to do? But my mind was empty, just like my belly. So I suddenly remembered what dispatch had said. So I looked at Joe. He still had his eyes closed and his head bent down. And I said, I am a Catholic, you know. And with that, his eyes popped open, his head came up, and he stared at me. And I said, okay, well, I very kind of officially said, I could do an exorcism if you want. And he eyes got wider, and yes, he nodded his head yes. So I explained to him what I would do. I said I would stand up and stand behind him and gently put my hands on his head. So Joe immediately shut his eyes, bent his head, and took off his ball cap. So I went behind him and I placed my hands gently on his head. And I said some kind of mumbo-jumbo religious stuff. And then in my most authoritative police voice, I said, "And I demand all of you evil voices in Joe's head, leave now and never come back." And I ended it with an amen. So I took my hands off his head, and Joe's eyes popped open, put his head up, put his baseball cap on. He stood straight up and walked right over to the door that led back out to the lobby. So I looked at him and I said, "Do you feel okay?" He nodded his head, "Okay." Yes, he did. And I said, "Do you hear any voices?" And he shook his head, "No." So I walked over to him and I said, "Well, you're free to go." I opened the door. He walked out into the lobby, and I watched him walk out of the front doors of the police station and back into the Fairbanks community. And I got to go to lunch. So. But I had to come back that night to work midnight shift again. And those of you who have been around long enough probably remember Jimmy Lowe Sr. He was a great guy. He was our watch commander that night. And Jimmy always took the briefing book, and he would read out loud all the calls that happened during the day, so we all knew what was going on. And he's reading along, and all of a sudden, "What? You can't close a case by exorcism. You can't do that." And that brought my eyes open. And I laughed, and I said, "Well, that was my case." And he goes, "Well, you can't close a case by exorcism." I said, "I didn't." And then I remembered that in that little interview room, there's a camera up above. So dispatch had been watching all along. All I know is I got to go to lunch. So Jimmy, we finished the briefing, and Jimmy was still muttering and sputtering about not being able to close a case by exorcism. So as he stomped out to go up and talk to dispatch, I went out to handle my first call of the night. And I can honestly tell you that the rest of my whole career, I never once had any more interactions with Joe. And I know that FPD never had any cases with him either. Amen! Thank you.
Peggy Sullivan. She shared that story at our November 2024 live event in Fairbanks. We'll be back in a moment to hear how Fairbanks defense attorney Bill Satterberg managed to get himself arrested. This is Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the Frontier Justice episode. I'm Rob Prince. Dark Winter Nights is thrilled to announce that our next live event will be Saturday, November 22nd, 2025, at 7 p.m. in Lathrop High School's Herring Auditorium. We've sold out our last five live shows in a row, so if you'd like tickets to the next show, we always announce when they go on sale on our e-newsletter first. You can sign up for that on our website, darkwinternights.com. That's also where you can reach out to us if you have a true story from Alaska you'd like to share. We always need your stories. Thank you so much. Up next on the show is a story from Fairbanks defense attorney Bill Satterberg, who discovered that getting arrested in Fairbanks, Alaska when you're a defense attorney can be a somewhat fun and rewarding experience, if you have the right attitude. He shared this story at our November 2024 live event in Fairbanks.
I started out practicing law back in 1976, and after a short period of time with the state, I ended up doing criminal defense work. And it's kind of an interesting area because you meet some real remarkable people. They have a lot to say and do, and sometimes you learn a lot about stuff in this town. But probably one of the best ones I ever had was I had a client named Tommy Hale. He was a member of a little-known fraternal men's organization called the Hells Angels. And I represented them for quite some period of time. Pretty nice group of folks now. Unfortunately, they're all gone. They kind of moved on. TMB, that was a medical term called too many birthdays. So we don't really have that club in town anymore to speak of. But at that time, when I was representing Tommy, he used to say that he was into body piercing. In fact, he served 32 years in prison for stabbing some guy to death. I didn't handle that case, but on the other hand, they pulled Tommy over on the Parks Highway one time. A gentleman named, a trooper named Brian Wassman, pulled Tommy over. And as they were searching Tommy, it was sort of like that scene out of Lethal Weapon, where we had Mel Gibson and Renee Zellweger just dropping guns and everything you could think of on the floor as they're searching Tommy. They came out, they had a beer box full of weapons that this kid had on him. I mean, he had lots of things, but one thing that Tommy had, which was a very unique item, was something called a kubaton. What a kubaton is a karate fighting device. But what happened is Tommy was busted for having prohibited metal knuckles. Now, I'm gonna give you folks a little legal advice here. You can own a submachine gun in Alaska. You can own a switchblade. You can own ninja knives or whatever, butterfly knives. You can own just about anything. But prohibited under Alaska law are prohibited metal knuckles. You cannot own prohibited metal knuckles. And so what happened is Trooper Wassman had busted Tommy, and one of the counts was possession of prohibited metal knuckles. And being a nice, young, smart attorney, I thought, hey, we can bring a motion to dismiss because that kubaton can't possibly be a pair of metal knuckles. I'll let you know later I was somewhat wrong on that. Anyway, so what had happened at the time is I had my secretary, personal assistant at the time, Laura, go down to the Bentley Mall, and there was a little kiosk in the Bentley Mall that was selling kubatons. And so Laura went down and she decided, you know, I'm going to get Bill. I said, I want something that looks non-threatening. Because Tommy's was, it was about that long and it was made out of iron. It was black. It had big sharp points on. I mean, it was an ugly looking piece of equipment. And he used to wear it around his neck. So Laura came back with another one, and it's a pink one, okay? And so Laura brings us in, and I said, well, that's cool. We'll go to trial with the jury. So we go to court. First of all, it's a dismissal motion before Judge Funk, Ray Funk. And at the time, I go in, and I bring Tommy over. And I tell the office at the time, look, you're going to probably have a situation here. You know, Tommy's kind of on the bad side of the troopers. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets arrested. We come walking through the door into the court building. And back then, what they would do is they would take your file, if you were an attorney, and they would just kind of heft it a little bit, make sure you didn't have a gun in it, and then let you come through with the metal detector. On the other, so that's what I did. I walked through the metal detector. And what I didn't realize at the time was that there was going to be some issues up in the courthouse a little later. We get into Judge Funk's courtroom, courtroom 201. And the first thing that happens is there's three state troopers sitting there. They're all sitting in the back with their arms folded. I go, this is interesting. Tommy and I walk in. They turn to Tommy and say, Mr. Hale, put your hands against the wall, please. Puts his hands up. They search him, go up and down and everything. And I go, what are you guys doing? We have a right to search him. We have a right to search him, and we're searching him. So, well, hell, we just went through the metal detector. You guys are getting awful badge heavy, which is a term turpos don't like to hear. They search Tommy. We sit down and think, this thing's already starting to go upside down pretty quick. They get on the stand, and Judge Funk goes, okay, Mr. Satterberg, I'm making my arguments. And the first thing that happens is Trooper Wassman's on the stand. And I said, Trooper Wassman, you know, it was a coup baton. You know what a coup baton is? He goes, no, I don't know what a coup baton is. And I open up the file, and in the file is this envelope, and it says evidence. And I didn't realize that Laura had put the coup baton we had bought into the file in an envelope. I thought, well, this is really good, man. I'm going to grab this one and go. So I said, well, here, let me show you. So I reach in, and I open up the envelope, and I pull this little pink thing out. And I go walking up, and I hand it to the trooper. I say, trooper, what is it? And Funk's going, what's a coup baton? What's a coup baton? So instead of giving it to the trooper, I give it to Judge Funk. And he's looking at it. And about then, the opposing counsel, a lady named Dana Merriman, finds Tommy's one in her evidence books, if you will. And so she comes up and says, Your Honor, may I approach? Okay, fine, that's how we do that. She goes up and she hands Tommy's to the judge. So now Judge Funk has got the pink thing and he's got Tommy's there in his hands. And the question is, well, Mr. Satterberg, what's the difference between yours and your client's? Well, Your Honor, my client's is long and black and mine's short and pink, but they do the same thing. Right then, things really started to go upside down. I thought it was a pretty good joke. I mean, coffee was spit halfway from the clerk's desk across the courtroom. I mean, and so I think, okay, we're fine. So then the Judge Funk says, well, Trooper, what do you think about this? And he holds it and he says, Your Honor, I think it's a pair of prohibited metal knuckles, says the perfect magic words. So I think this is getting fun. So the trooper says, Judge Funk says, can I see that again, please? No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I am seizing it. The trooper goes, what? You're seizing it. So Mr. Satterberg, you may inquire. Trooper, you're seizing it. What do you mean you're seizing it as evidence? We sit there, and I get done with the cross-examination, and at the end of it, the question's put to the, Your Honor, I move to dismiss. He says, well, Mr. Satterberg, it's going to be a jury question. I'm not going to rule on whether it's a prohibited metal knuckles or not. It's a jury question. They can decide. Okay, fine. So ding, ding, everybody gets up and walks out. I'm getting ready to leave, and Wassman comes up to me. He goes, Mr. Satterberg? Yes, sir. Do you have any other weapons on you? I didn't have any weapons on me to begin with. Well, he said, do you have any other weapons on you? I said, no, I told you. I don't have any. About then, Funk opens up the door, comes in and goes, I don't know what these troopers are going to do to you, Mr. Satterberg, but don't ever bring anything like that into my courtroom again. Thanks, Judge. Appreciated that. He goes back out the door. And so we're still kind of debating with the troopers. Now we got these three troopers standing around me. Tommy's standing over the corner just kind of looking at me, go, this is interesting. And then so the door opens again. Funk comes in again. Same speech. I don't know what these troopers are doing to you or what they're going to do, but don't ever bring it back again. I'm just warning him. Oh, yes, Your Honor. I understand. So what happens is that the third time he comes in, I think, this is it. I'm going down hard. So Funk leaves again. Bossman says, okay, Mr. Satter, put your hands behind your back. You know, you're under arrest. And he hauls me out the door. So I'm sitting there and tell Tommy, call my office. Tell him I'm going to be late getting back. Now, I had actually thought about spending the night in jail because I had a lot of clients I had to meet that day anyway. And I figured, and what the hell? I mean, see what the food's like and a few things like that, maybe even get a tattoo. So anyway, we're on the way down to the jail, right? I'm getting hauled out of the courthouse, and people are looking at me. I get my handcuffs behind my back. I'm getting hauled out. I'm laughing about this in a way, but I can handle this, I think. We're on our way down to the jail. Now, one thing you folks may not know is that it's legal in Alaska to tape record somebody without their knowledge, as long as one person to the conversation knows that. And we also know that most troopers and city police officers, they will tape record. So I know I'm being tape recorded, and I know that, and Wassman and I had some stuff in the past between us, so it wasn't like a loving relationship. And he's driving down, and I'm going, Trooper Wassman, are you still messing around with that lady down at the Elks? What's your wife think about this thing, man? God, I can't believe this. I mean, every time your reputation is terrible. I mean, I can't believe you're doing this stuff. And I can see his knuckles are turning white. The steering wheel's beginning to bend. I thought, Satterberg, we may not be going to the jail if you keep this up. I'm not a good swimmer. I didn't feel like going to the Tanawha River. So anyway, they pull us in the jail. We go walking in, and we go walking through the door, and the jailers are in hysterics. What the hell are you doing here? And I'm laughing by then. I'm thinking, well, what can you say? So I'm inside there, and they're trying to book me. And Wassman's going, got to figure out what to charge you with. And I said, well, there's misconduct involving a weapon in the fourth degree, which is a class A misdemeanor. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, and there's another one here. I said, no, there's another one you can charge me with, too. I said, give me the book. So we're sitting there, and I'm flopping through the book. And I said, you can charge me with this, too. And he looks at me, Bill, he called me Bill, by the way, why do you want to be charged with two crimes? I said, simple. I'm going to use a Visa card to bail out Alaska Airlines miles. And he goes, that does it. I'm only going to give you one count. Okay, so I get my picture taken, I get my handprints taken, everything else. Joyard started laughing. I was thinking about spending the night there. I had a client that was coming in at 6 o'clock at $2,000, and back then that meant a lot to me. So I decided I'd get released, so I used my Visa card and I bailed out. And then Wasserman comes to me and goes, "You want a ride back?" No, thank you. I don't need a ride back. I'll get myself back if you don't mind. And so he takes off. The office comes and they pick me up. And I go home. Well, the next day, we have a big headline that comes out on the newspaper. Local attorney arrested for carrying prohibited metal knuckles. And there I am with my big smiling face and local attorney arrested. I go to the Elks that night. I'm down there and I'm talking to a friend of mine. And I'm starting to get a little pissed. I'm saying, "No, I don't like this. This is ridiculous. I can't believe this guy arrested me in the courtroom for arguing that something wasn't a weapon." And he goes, "Well," he says, "what are you going to do about it?" I said, I think I'm going to sue him. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to sue him," which, of course, everybody expects to hear that from a lawyer. And he looks at me and he goes, "No," he says, "you can't do that. You got to make it funny." And I said, "Like what? Free the Fairbanks One?" Because back then they had the Fairbanks Eight, which were the ones that were down in Laughlin and got in a lot of trouble down there, clients. But this, I said, "What, free the Fairbanks One?" And he goes, "No, Willie, you got to come up with a better slogan." And we looked at each other at the same time and go, "Free Willie." So what happens is I go that night, it's still early, so I take off, there you go, and I go down to the local shirt shop in the Bentley Mall right next to the kiosk that sold the illegal weapon, and I have about three of these shirts made. Now, these things are expensive, folks, and I'm kind of a cheap guy. We're talking like $25. So the next night, I come walking into the Elks, recognizing that the bartender of the Elks has got a relationship going with Brian, right? But she doesn't know that I know, because Fairbanks is a small town, as was pointed out. So I come walking in. I'm wearing my Free Willy sweatshirt and her T-shirt, and I come out and I sit at the bar. She looks at me. She goes, "Wow, that is so cool." I go, "Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?" She goes, "Where'd you get?" I said, "I had it made." Next thing she says is, "Do you have any more?" Well, I did. I had this one. I had a large, and I had an extra large. And I said, "Why, would you want one?" And she goes, "Yeah, I really would." Okay, so I go back on the car and I come in with the extra large T-shirt. Now, here's an audience participation question. Where's a woman gonna wear an extra large T-shirt? Okay, so the next day I come walking in and Lisa now is no longer in a happy mood. She is scrubbing the bar with her bar rag. Smoke and steam is coming off the rag. And I walk in, I sit up the bar. "Hi, Lisa, how you doing?" "How you doing?" "Lisa, what's the problem here?" Quote, "That pencil d-. "Who are you referring to?" "Brian." "Brian who?" I ask innocently. She goes, "Wasserman. What are you talking about?" "That's my boyfriend." "Was my boyfriend." "What? We broke up last night. He has no sense of humor." And so I see Brian about 2 weeks later. I said, "You mess with me, I mess with you." So... The next, it's in the newspaper. People are talking about this thing. So what happens is I have the T-shirts made. And the next thing I do is I go and I have a bunch of coffee cups made. This is my coffee cup, if you will. And it's kind of dated, but it was my mugshot. And so I had these things. And I remember a friend of mine, Mike Donovan, sent me an email and said, "Bill, we've started a fund for you. And when we raise enough money for postage, we're going to mail it." And then he also told me that he liked the coffee cups. It stood out real well at 100 yards. So then the next thing I did is I had the bumper stickers made, which you saw up there behind me just a minute ago, the Free Willy bumper stickers. Now, what's interesting about the bumper stickers is that I had one state trooper, a gentleman named Gary Tellup, who was a state trooper. And I like Gary. He was a good guy and a retired trooper now. Gary contacted me. He said, "Can I have about 20 of those, please?" And I said, "Why?" "Well, you don't want to really ask." But it turns out I learned later on that, Dan, there was one state trooper car that had bumper stickers all over it, had bumper stickers all over this one state trooper, Brian's locker, his desk, and every time he took them off, they'd show up again. I made care to have these things made out of vinyl, if you will, so you couldn't tear them. And these things just kept going. We've been there like our fifth printing now of bumper stickers. Eventually, what happens is that they decide they're going to dismiss the case. Teresa Foster, who was a DA, comes out with a news release, says, "We're going to dismiss the case." And Daryl Lewis, if you folks remember Daryl, does it on TV. And he goes, "Well, Ms. Foster, why are they dismissing?" Well, Mr. Satterberg really hasn't done anything wrong. He just exercised poor judgment. He doesn't have any prior criminal history. Well, that really upset me. So I said, Darryl, equal time, please. You know, I have a right to rebut this thing. So he goes, okay, fine. So we go on television the next day, and I'm standing there in my T-shirt. I've got a bunch of these mugs stepped up and a bunch of bumper stickers on the wall behind me. And the first thing he says to me is, he says, Mr. Satterberg, how do you feel about this case being dismissed? I said, you know, America's a free country, and I have a right to prove myself innocent. Now, that's not really the standard, all you future jurors. Just keep that in mind. It's the other way around. And I said, he said, anything else that you regret? And I said, well, yeah. And the camera pulled back, and they show the bumper stickers and the cups and my shirts. I said, folks, you better come on down. The sale starts tomorrow. Okay. Now we're almost done. We're almost done. Well, the case is dismissed. But at that point, I want my pink thing back. And I always refer to it as my little pink thing. I never once called it a prohibited weapon. I never once called it anything except my little pink thing. And so what developed there was that eventually I got in touch with Greg Rankus, who was the attorney general at the time under Murkowski, the male one, not the female one. And I said, hey, Greg, I want my little pink thing back. No, we're not going to return it. I want my little pink thing. We exchanged letters for about a year, actually. And finally, I wrote a letter and I said, okay, here's the deal. If you don't give it back to me, I'm going to tell you that the lawsuit, a copy of which is attached as Appendix A, will be filed against the state of Alaska. Not that I'm into suing people, of course. And it said, on or about April 8th, 2002, at or near Fairbanks, Alaska, in the 4th Judicial District, Trooper Brian Wassman seized Satterberg's little pink thing and has held on and has held on to it tightly ever since. Satterberg demands the complete and full and immediate release of his little pink thing. Now, the final joke was on me. My secretary at the time, Marty, filed the lawsuit. So if you folks, and I looked it up today, I had to double check. If you go and you take a look into mid-July of 2003, you will see me demanding the complete and full release of my little pink thing. And I finally did get it back.
Bill Satterberg. He shared that story at our November 2024 live event in Fairbanks. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the Frontier Justice episode. Today's episode was edited by myself, Rob Prince. Story consultation by Lori Neufeld. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights.